Good evening, everyone. My name is Mike. I'm an abstaining, maintaining, compulsive overeater from Denver, Colorado. Hello, gang. I've got some details here for you that I thought you might like. I love the things that you can find on the internet. I've now been in OA for 45 years and 7 months, and I've been abstinent for 42 years, 3 months, and 1 day, which means that I won't tell you how old I am, but what the hell? I'm 68. 68 years, 2 months, and 5 days. Let's just get that out of the way. So that means that I have been in Overeaters Anonymous 66.8% of my life, and I've been abstinent 61.97% of my life. Yay, God. And I have been abstinent 92.6% of the time I've been in OA. I know that this stuff for you is probably just, what does this have to do with anything? Nothing. It's just that I have a degree in biology and accounting, and statistics are most important. So I just wanted you to get those basic statistics. I'm most grateful. I want you to know that one of the things, just quickly, I want to read from the Just for Today. It says, just for today, I will be agreeable. I will look as well as I can, dress becomingly, talk low, act courteously, criticize not one bit, not find fault with anything, and try not to improve or regulate anybody except myself. The only two that I will do this evening is I will look as well as I can and dress becomingly. That's the only thing that I'm going to guarantee this evening. I just want you all to know that I am fully dressed. I'm one of those. Yes, I know in Zoom we could be in our jammies and all this other stuff, but I am dressed as if I was right there with you personally. And that's very important, because in this program, I was taught that when asked to do service, we do it and we look professional, not professional, but we dress become, and that's very important to me. So when I found out about the spiritual aspect of this program, that I was asked to talk on that, I was just going, okay. And I have been ruminating on this for a long time, just because all I can do is share my strength, hope, and experience. So what you need to know at the beginning is I come from a good German, Irish, Roman Catholic, Kansas farm type family. And so there were 7 of us kids in the family. My eldest brother had cerebral palsy. I was the second child. And I went to a public school taught by nuns. So this should give you some parameters as to what this is going to be like. As I was thinking about my childhood, I've come to realize that I truly was a spiritual child, but I couldn't talk about this stuff, about God and all this other stuff, even though the family was religious, because back in the late 50s and early 60s, you just didn't talk about that stuff. You just pretty much kept it to yourself. And so that's what I did. Now, I was a normal weight until, I don't know what happened between second and third grade, but by the time I was in the third grade, I was already at 110 pounds. And from grades 3 through 12, then I gained 15 and a half pounds each year on top of what I already weighed. So by the time I was getting ready to go to college, my top weight was 232 pounds. And the only reason that it was probably more than that, because I'd mowed a lawn that morning and it was humid back in the Kansas City area. So I probably was about 235 or something like that. But anyway, the last time I was weighed, I only allow my medical professional to weigh me, because numbers are still an indication of goodness and badness to me. And the last time I was weighed, I was at 157 pounds, which is a pretty big deal, actually. And I've been able to, by God's grace, to maintain that weight loss for 41 and a half, 42 years, for a long time, folks. It is possible to do that. The thing about this that you also need to know is that I really have come to understand through being around this program for decades, is that it's one thing to deal with the physical part. It's one thing to deal with the emotional part. But this spiritual part is the part that just gets people wound up tighter than an 8-day clock. What in the world are we supposed to do with that? And I'll be quoting stuff out of the AA Big Book and the OA 12 and 12. And it says, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. Notice it says, if we have the proper attitude. Now, with all of that being said, I wish I could tell you that when I came into this program, I thought, oh my God, I'm going to become a spiritual giant in my own mind, which I have become on a couple of occasions. But the thing that's important that I want to share with you is this spiritual aspect did not come easy for me. And I had a belief in a power that was greater than myself. Yes, I had church, but yes, I did not understand this thing. because I still wanted to control so much stuff. I was very fortunate in the sense that I never gave up on my search for God, the search for my higher power and the willingness to do this. That third step, people, here's what I really think, folks. We make it in OA, and I think when we come in here, most of us are just so irritated that, what do you mean we've got to turn this over to God? What's God got to do with? What I found about what God has to do with my food is the fact that I was physically hungry because I was spiritually starving. I just did not have that part of me that could be fed, and food just never fixed it. I'm your basic sugar addict, folks. I can eat the stuff frozen, baked, raw, thawed, or indifference. And I have eaten moldy fruitcake under the auspices of, I could use the penicillin. Now, what you should really be concerned about is my first degree is in biology education. And I know that penicillin needs to be refined. And one of the things that is growing up with the church and all this other stuff, Lent was a time we were supposed to do prayer and fasting and all this other stuff. Folks, I don't know about you, but my fast never lasted longer than 3 days. How about 3 hours? Let's just call it what it really is. And so that just never worked for me. The thing that I have found about the spiritual life is that it is one of the most challenging and intricately involved aspects of this 12-step way of life. I remember hearing years ago, religion prepares us for the life hereafter. Spirituality, as the 12-step way of life teaches us, helps us to save our butts today. The one thing I can do is just say, God, I want this food and I want it now. What am I going to do about it? And the thing of it is, when I just say it in a prayer or even text it to somebody, it diminishes. That thing diminishes. It's like that thing on my shoulder where it's watching over. My higher power is always watching over me. And sometimes I want to brush it off and say, I'll handle this. Thank you very much. You've got so much other stuff to do. When I first came in, when they said, you've got to pray for food. And I was going, but God, you've got wars to take care of. You've got children who are abused. You've got the poor who are hungry. You've got all this other stuff. What does food have to do with this? And what it has to do with is my sanity. Because if I'm not sane, then I'm not worth much to many folks. I cannot be there for other people. That's one of the things that I've learned. I'm so glad that I was so thrilled to see that they use that particular reading from four to, because it just, I'll get into that in a little bit later. And then yesterday's reading from Voices of Recovery. I don't know if many of you read that, but I'm going to read that because it's very poignant for this talk this evening. All of this experience, knowledge, and help is augmented by a source of wisdom inside us that becomes more powerful as we recover from compulsive eating and develop our relationship with our higher power through prayer and meditation. The 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I don't know what page it's on because it's a second edition. And it says, those of us who have trouble with the concept of God need only to look within. The solution, we learn, is always to turn away from the outer to the inner. But what does this really mean? Worldly clamors never cease. Daily, we are bombarded with false advertising, negative news, angry people, problematic schedules, glittering material goods, and enticing substances. When we pause in prayer and meditation, the answers come from seeing with our spiritual eye and listening to the voice of our soul. Could these be visions and whisperings from God? Eventually, we discover that by living abstinently, we establish or renew an acquaintance with a higher power who was within us all along. After all, where else would a personal God be? We learn not only to seek, but to connect with this inner illumination and make it a working part of our lives. I think one of the most important things is in the big book early on when Abby tells Bill, why don't you figure out a conception of a power greater than yourself on your own that's yours? And that's what I had to do. I just struggled with that for a long time. And I don't know how many of you in here are psychology majors or anything like that. But in Jean Piaget's theory of the stages of growth, I'm in the concrete operational stage, which means I'm very tactile. I need to see this. What I did was, for a while I was trying to figure out this thing about God, I found a rock and I put that rock in my car. And that rock was not my God. That rock was it was my tactile God, because if I needed it, I could pick it up and touch it and feel it. I knew that if the car burned down, the rock would still be there because the rock wouldn't melt. I knew if there was a bomb blast or anything in the car, the rock would survive even if it was in a bunch of little pieces. And I just knew that rock was always there. Folks, that's how I had to start with this. Because you see, back in 1979, after about a year and a half of abstinence, I willingly went back to the food. I did not pray. I did not talk about it. I just went right for the food. I'm not saying that's wonderful to do. And for those of you who have ever suffered relapse with the misery and the pain and all that stuff, and I know I have another relapse left, but because of how much I horsed around early on, I don't think I've got another recovery left, but I'm not about to test the boundaries, if you know what I mean. There's so much good stuff that we have in our literature. Our revised version of the 12 and 12 is just absolutely chock full of good stuff from step 11. And one of the things that I tell you what, it's this program, the spiritual aspect that I learned in this program that helped me to develop a deeper understanding of my particular religious faith. Back in 1971, January of 1971, when Bill Wilson died, and it was spread all over the newspapers, I knew that if I would ever get drunk, I was going to need Alcoholics Anonymous. I just knew that from the depths of my soul. So I just want you to know that by God's grace, I've never been drunk. I've never used drugs, and I've never used pot. They don't call Denver the Mile High City for nothing. The thing of it is, you have to realize it was also self-preservation, because growing up in a good German, Irish, Roman Catholic, Kansas farm family in a small community, in high school, there's always these weird little groups of kids. There's the fat kids, there's the theater kids, there's these kids, there's the fat kids, there's the gay kids. My high school was so damn small, I fit in two of the categories. I was the fat gay kid. And the reason that I never drank or used drugs or anything like that was because I knew if I would ever do that, I would probably lose control, put the moves on somebody, and I could either gotten the snot pounded out of me or even killed. So I just stayed away from that all totally. It's not because I was a good, holy man by any stretch of the imagination. The thing about the spiritual life that I found in OA is that it is challenging. It is one of those things that, boy, I have to work it, and I have to work it, and I have to work it, and I have to work it. In 1979, on August the 5th, I woke up and I said, "Dad, damn it, I'm still alive." And this was after about 8 months of binging. And so I started my abstinence with three moderate banquets a day with nothing in between. And I always said that I had a serving platter that had sideboards on it. And whatever was in there, that was my meal. And the longer I continued to abstain, the smaller the meals got, because I was depending more upon my higher power. And then in 1980, I was working for a major retailer in their catalog distribution center. And all of a sudden, I thought, I want donut gems. And I knew what they tasted like. I could see them. I could smell them. I could taste them. But I knew I was going to have to go get them. And I knew that if I went back there, I was doomed. It was at that time that I knew that if I had that, I couldn't blame OA. I couldn't blame the church. I couldn't blame my parents. I couldn't blame my sponsor. I couldn't blame anybody but me. The responsibility was mine. And I just said, God, I just can't do this anymore. Now, I'd been abstinent. And I can tell you, in February of 1980, I literally felt that sugar compulsion be literally lifted out of me. I don't know if any of you have ever had that experience, but I felt it leave my body. I just left, and it has not returned. Now, I've been around stuff. I didn't bake for decades. I didn't do a lot of stuff. I didn't go where the stuff was, because I didn't trust myself. But folks, that was the biggest spiritual awakening I ever had. I just want to see a show of hands. How many of you in here think that all spiritual awakenings are filled with furry kittens, puppy dogs, unicorns, and rainbows? How many of you believe that your spiritual awakenings are like that? Let me tell you, mine ain't. Mine are sometimes they kick me in the butt from here to hell and back. For example, there were some men that were going to the OA meeting that I attended. And don't you just love it when people in OA tell you what you're supposed to do? These people said, go help those men. And I, in my mind, said, no. So one day when I was out running, God said to me, work with those guys. And I said, no. So I ran a little further, and God once again just said, work with those guys. And I said, hell no. So I ran a little further, and God said to me the third time, work with those guys. Because I respect you all, I am cleaning this up tremendously. I said, I am not going to work with those heterosexual evangelical men. That was the most painful spiritual awakening I'd ever had, because these men had never shown me anything but kindness, courtesy, and respect. And I was the one who was judging them. They weren't judging me. And let me tell you, that hurt. So I said, okay, God, such a deal I got for you. I'll tell them this is what we'll do. And when they turn me down, I have done my due diligence. So I said, okay, guys, I'll tell you what, let's go through the OA workbook and we'll do this if you'd like. And I didn't think they would. Folks, they said yes. And so we went through, we read the OA 12 and 12. We did all of the questions out of the workbook and stuff. And that little men's study group is still going on after 11 and a half years. And it wasn't anything that I did except have one of those major spiritual awakenings that I didn't want to. Many wonderful things, many awful things have happened since I've been abstinent. Like I sat for the CPA exam 9 times and never passed a part. Yeah. And I didn't eat over it either. And I just said, God, do you really want me to be a CPA? Obviously not. I think maybe my dearly departed mom, who was in OA, said, I think I would have quit after the third time. I said, yeah, but you raised me to be stubborn. I always blame the parents somewhere. And another one of the most painfully spiritual things, I thought I felt the call to be a priest. So I made formal application and did all that stuff. And I was just upfront and honest with them. Now, this was back in the late 70s, early 80s. And I filled out all the applications, did all that stuff. And I refused to go in. And I didn't lie. I told him the truth about me. Of course, I was told no. And I said, okay. So the other part of that was a couple of years later, I was in Kansas City and I went out, needed to be with my peeps. So I went to one of the gay bars in Kansas City and I was leaving because number one, I was tired. And number two, I didn't mind the drinking. It was the cigarette smoke that drove me crazy. So as I was leaving, who should walk in but the former archdiocesan vocational director who told me no. Now, this was a time when all of those little, they had those little bracelets, WWJD, and I was just going, what am I going to do? And I looked at him and I said, I'll use a pseudonym for him. I said, Bob, how are you? And he looked at me. And remember those cartoon characters where their eyes bug out and the jaw drops and the tongue is flapping in the breeze? That's exactly what that man did. And he said, why didn't you ever call me? And I said, Bob, we know the real reason why. And the thing of it was, I did not call the archbishop. I did not tell any of his superiors, because that's not my job, folks. My job is to keep my side of the street clean. And that was very painful. But at the same time, what would that say about my spiritual life if I did that? Step 6 and 7 are, I believe, the fulcrum of this program. On a linear scale, you've got steps 6 and 7, and they're the fulcrum steps, because those two steps, naturally, I can't remember them to save my life right now. The sixth step is, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And the step 7 is humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. I'm going to tell you what's important for me is I quit praying about my defects, because did you realize that on page 36 of the OA 12 and 12, second edition, there are a list of 27 assets. And my sense is, if you haven't written on those assets, then you haven't completed a full inventory, because you've only done the defects. Do the assets, people. And if you want to find out how difficult it is to do them, because they're a pain in the butt to do, I've done that myself. And I just want you to know that I'm just going to tell you, I'm going to use PAGLs, pride, anger, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, and sloth. We're just going to go with the 7 deadly real quickly. And here's what happens when I pray not to have my character defects removed, but my character assets increased. When I change that to the more positive, God, please help me have, please increase my character assets. Because when my character assets increase, my character defects decrease. Here's what happens. With pride, I go from pride to humility. I go from anger to serenity. I go from greed to generosity. I go from gluttony to abstinence. I go from lust to love. I go from envy to compassion and kindness. And I go from sloth, which the first definition in my dictionary is spiritually apathetic, to being emotionally, physically, and spiritually active. When I use that spiritual part, the assets increase, the defects decrease. So I'm going to just challenge you to try that. Do those assets on page 36 and then the second full paragraph of that page of the second edition of the 08, 12, and 12. And I just want you to know that when I get up in the morning, even before I get up to go pee, my knees hit the floor. And this is what I do. I say five things. I say, dear God, please help me with the food. Dear God, please help me with my abstinence. Dear God, please remove the uncontrollable desire to eat compulsively today. Please help me with my attitude. Please help me to be of service to others today. It only takes a couple, 3 minutes, and I'm off to the bathroom. I also have other prayers that I say as I'm preparing for the morning. And the other part of it is I say the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, and some other prayers that I've learned. One of the most important things that it says about praying, it says, what do we say when we talk with God? We say whatever we feel like saying. Now, let me tell you, for those of you who know me, I had the tongue of a sailor. And sometimes my prayers are far from pretty, but folks, they're damned honest. When I'm hurting and all that other stuff, I can say, this is so miserable, God, and but please help me. And I'm given that grace. The other part of it is they talk about meditation. And it says the only way to do meditation wrong is not to do it at all. I believe that every single person in here has done prayer and they've all done meditation. One of the ways that I do my meditation is when I go out to run, because I clear my mind. The running is what clears my mind. And many wonderful things have come to me while I have run. And it's just amazing to me. You want to have a good spiritual life? It says in our 08, 12, and 12, What we have to do is to build this relationship with the power greater than ourselves. And how do we do it? On a daily basis. By just saying, okay, I might not think that you're doing what you're supposed to do, because my prayer used to be, dear God, get thy ass in gear because you're not moving fast enough. But you know what? God works in God's time. And I just say, okay, God, just please give me the grace to do what I need to do. And some of the best things that have happened. And I just want you all to know that you can have that life of sane and happy usefulness. You can have all of this good stuff come to you. And all we have to do is just find someone to walk with us through this. And for those of you who are agnostic or atheist, I always say, I don't have a God and I don't have a power greater than myself. And I always say, yeah, you do. It's called food. And I've irritated a few people. And even with some believers, I said, yeah, if you really believe so, why are you still eating? Needless to say, I have irritated more folks than you can ever realize, just because I'm a little too damned honest with the spiritual aspect. And the last thing I want to say is, one time when I was leading a retreat in Canada, I almost caused an international row because I was just being honest with a bunch of stuff. And all I can say is it was held at a Catholic retreat center. And I'm just grateful that all of those crosses had a body on it, because I knew mine was going to be up there next, just because of all the havoc that I was wreaking. But the thing of it is, it's very painful to hear some of this spiritually challenging stuff. And yet at the same time, it's a balm for our soul. So thank you very much for allowing me to share my strength, hope, and experience with you.